Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
It's another Friday afternoon and you are tuned to another episode of the Sideshow. I am delighted to say we have something just a little bit different for you today. Now, you might remember some time ago by way of introduction that I built a garden in Dublin. It contained a Morris Minor. I called it No Rubber Solo. It was split in two. The making of the garden was put to a song, which was Drive My Car, logically, which came from the Beatles album Rubber Soul. I call the garden, therefore, No Rubber Soul. It's fair to suggest that I have been eclipsed and eclipsed again on many levels by a gentleman by the name of Paul Stone. We'll get into Paul and what he does for a living and how he does that in just a little bit. But on the 50th anniversary of BBC Gardeners World Live, not only that, and also on the 50th anniversary of the Sgt. Pepper's album, I am one of their greatest fans. It is a delight and a pleasure to have him on the telephone. Before we get into this, anything you might need at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesideshow, and sideshow.com for the entire back catalogue. And if you like what you hear, head straight to that iTunes or Stitcher provider and you may leave a rate and review there. Paul Stone, you are very welcome to the Sideshow. How are you?
Hi, Peter. I'm good. Yeah, it's pretty sticky here in Birmingham at the moment, but at least it's reasonable weather for working.
It is indeed. You're mid-build as we speak at this moment in time in the middle of the NEC in Birmingham. How's the, I call it a show garden, how's the build of that garden going for you?
Yes, it's a tricky one whether you're going to call it a show garden or not. I'm creating an environment there. I'm inviting the people to, the public coming to the show to step back into 1967 by various diverse means. And interesting hearing you talking about Sgt. Pepper's there, actually, because I clocked that as well. And the album, well, I spent some desperate time looking for my copy of the album, and you know, it would be a 1967 copy too, and I believe my sister's borrowed it.
I know when I went to Horticultural College, the day I went to the bus stop with my brother. Francis gave me the £20 note some moons ago. I know I still look young and graceful and face for radio, says you. But I went to O'Connell Bridge and I bought this really large Beatles poster, and it's taken from the Rubber Soul photograph collection. It's the only thing that I have kept since I was 17 years of age, 18 years of age, all the way through. It was framed in my bedroom when I bought my first house as a reminder of where I came from. And now that I'm a little bit taller, and says he, as I discussed with Anne-Marie Powell a couple of weeks ago, the only difference between me and young Peter is that I now shave. It's framed in my living room. Your bio, Paul, however, says essentially that you grew up in the swinging 60s. And I was kind of going, what? Is this for real? Has the PR department got a sense of humour? Were you around at that time, Paul? Do you mind me asking that question?
Well, it's a terrible thing to say, but I'm 62 now, but I still feel like 32, so that's okay. In many respects, I'm a child more of the 70s, but I was young in the 60s. I remember, you know, albums like Rubber Soul coming out and all the early Beatles music coming out pre-67. Come around about 67, the whole world was changing, and in particular, you know, in horticulture too, it's been an interesting journey for me putting together this garden. The research has been very profitable for me, really. There's going to be lots to talk about when we open the show. I'll be manning the stand with a colleague who's also from 60s nursery activities, and we're looking forward to meeting the public and looking at all the things that used to happen and those things that are still with us and those things that have been replaced.
Well, let's get a little bit into this, because for those who are listening in the United States, for those who are listening in Ireland, I would have grown up with a grown man in a potting shed with a beard. And as I have maybe jested beforehand, when he ruffled that beard, he usually pulled out a trowel or a pencil or something along those lines. And essentially that was what we knew gardening on television. What is Gardener's World number one, and what is Gardener's World the live show?
Yeah, well, Gardener's World number one is really the showcase, the main way that the British public gain access to news about what's new in horticulture, what's going on, learning. And usually, it's always presented over the years by some very charismatic characters from various people like Percy Thrower and Jeff Hamilton, Alan Titchmarsh. These people have almost become iconic over the period of time because, you know, the show's watched by many millions, usually a one-hour show these days every Friday evening on BBC One, you know, so it's primetime TV. And, you know, it's as Top Gear is for cars, Gardeners World Live is for plants.
And again, it's on in the NEC Birmingham. It's taking place the 15th to the 18th of June. And if you just Google BBC Gardeners World Live Show, all of those details will come up for you. And if you're stuck for any of that, just at Sideshow on Twitter and we'll put you directly in touch with them. How does the live show work, Paul?
Well, Gardeners World Live is very similar to the major RHS shows like Chelsea and Hampton Court, Tatton Park, Malvern. It's part of a calendar of events, open air and indoor gardening events, where, you know, the public have the opportunity to come up close up to plants, have a good look at them, look for ideas for their gardens, look for products that are going to be innovative or helpful to them in their gardens, and also just have a brilliant day out enjoying plants and the open air with like-minded people. So there's always lots of food and you know, lots of activities, lots of talks as well going on all the time. So it's a great celebration of gardening. And the Gardeners World Live Show at the NEC, the National Exhibition Centre in Birmingham, attracts 100,000 people over the 4 days to the show. And there is an enormous hall that's entirely devoted to dry products like garden furniture and barbecues, you name it, it'll be in there. Mowers, of course, all sorts of gardening equipment. And then outside, there is another hall that's devoted, when I say outside, the hall itself is outside of the main NEC complex, and that's essentially the Gardeners World Live's version of a tent in which all the classic displays of specialist plants like roses, pelargoniums, you know, every single sweet pea under the sun will be shown in perfect arrangement by specialist growers. And this particular show, it's a selling show as well, so you can buy stuff from these stands during the course of the 4 days. And finally, there is an outdoor area where the gardens are. That's where we are. I've got a lovely little kind of bank area, which I worked on last year, and I'm back on it again this year. It's around about 20 metres by 10 metres, which is a big space. That's equivalent to the biggest garden that you get at the Chelsea Flower Show, if you have that opportunity. And so I'm lucky to have been given a really nice project here celebrating 50 years of Gardeners World, the TV show. When I first was given that brief, actually I didn't think too much of it, because I think it's a difficult thing to do, to celebrate years. But I'm pretty happy with how it's worked out in the end. You know, the actual display that we're going to put on, I think, is going to be, you know, really quite exciting for the public, because they'll be able to walk in, they'll be able to get up close, they're going to be able to enjoy all sorts of iconic things that were in the 1960s. And I'm really looking forward to it being quite a party.
Do you remember, that sounds a little bit disrespectful, but your first appearance on Gardeners World TV programme, Paul, when was that?
Ooh, well, you know, I'm not a regular person on the show. The only time I ever appear on it is if I've done some work at a garden show that's been interesting and notable enough for somebody to want to talk to me about it. And so on a couple of occasions, I've been lucky enough for that. I think the first time that I was ever interviewed in a garden with a Gardener's World presenter was actually with Dermot Gavin, sitting in a couple of deck chairs, funnily enough, celebrating 40 years of Help the Aged being in existence. Because Help the Aged as a charity is where I started in show gardens. They, back in 87, they had done one garden previously, and their contractor wasn't able to do it that year, and suggested that my little firm, based in Brighton at the time, would maybe be suitable for doing the job, particularly actually as there's a gentleman called Robin Williams, who's a garden designer, who had designed the garden for Help the Aged, and I had previously he had actually been my tutor for garden design at Agricultural Horticultural College when I was actually at college learning something about what to do in gardening. So we had a lovely lucky in there. And, you know, we went on for 10 years building gardens for Help the Aged. And so, you know, probably in answer to your question, I would say that probably the first garden where I was interviewed was something around about 1990, something like that. I can't remember exactly. And so we'd done this garden for Help the Aged, celebrating 40 years. And so I'd actually made a garden that was a 60s garden then. And that's where I used, first time, a mini car to nail down exactly what period of time we were at. You know, that, and then all the other features of what was basically a very normal urban garden with products from the 60s we used in it. So you can tell from that, actually, that I'm fortunate. I'm kind of revisiting slightly something that I've done previously, although this garden here at Gardens World Live won't look anything like the one that I did for Help the Aged.
On your own bat, Paul, I know when the bios came in for you from the Gardeners World Live PR department, it notes that you have won gold medals at Chelsea Hampton Court Palace Flower Show that I've had the privilege to be at last year. That's as, I guess, designing and building as well, which is something that you rarely find the two kind of combined together. What was your first gold medal, Paul?
Well, I mean, I like to think of my first gold medal as being the first gun that we built that was actually designed by somebody else. But, you know, you put so much time and effort into putting together the garden itself, that when you and your team are awarded a gold medal, you really feel like it's your garden. So the first gold medal that I got was probably in 1988, but not from my own design. Only really in the 90s did I start designing and building gardens, sometimes employing contractors to do the design and other times putting together my own team. So I've been lucky to, I think I've had about 3 or 4 gold medals at Chelsea. I've actually done been much more successful at Hampton Court, where I've had strings of gold medals and 2 best in shows, which I'm very proud of. They call it Tudor Rose, and you know, it's a fantastic feeling when you when you get hold of a nice trophy like that after what's really a build up. It's about a year's build up from the initial moment in time where you're given a brief, getting the client to agree, the client incidentally being the person who's paying for this event. Getting them to agree that they like the design, which isn't always a given, and then finding all the disparate parts to make the thing something special. And there's so many, you know, I mean, it's extremely complicated in terms of, you know, building expertise, plant perfection, and sometimes you can have even all of that, and somehow a garden either works or it doesn't work, and you can see your gold medal slip away. I mean, I've had lots of things called silver gilts, which are like silver with a bit of gold in it. Doesn't. I'm sad to say that that tends to be a disappointment. There we go. You know,
you wouldn't be on your own there, Paul. I mean, I've had this conversation with Andrew Wilson 3-4 years ago. It's an upcoming show with Gavin McWilliam where they did eventually, apologies gentlemen if that sounds a little bit untoward in any way, but you know, they won 3 silver gilts 3 years running at Chelsea Flower Show, and again on fourth attempt, you might say, won gold. And equally, I understand that little bit of disappointment, and I empathise to a great extent, bearing in mind Andrew would have judged gardens that I would have designed. In fact, that one with the Morris Minor and the Rubber Soul album in it, he did and awarded it silver. And I can't strive enough that, how do you say, that garnering for perfection is something that is in my head. And I understand that a silver or silver gilt is, you know, it's not to be sniffed at in any way. But at the same token, do you find that you are a little bit of the perfectionist, almost in, and I refer to myself in this, that I would irate others by saying it's not, it's good, but it's not good enough. And the difference between silver gilt and gold is, it's quite minimal. Is that a fair point to make?
Yeah, I think so, because I mean, at the end of the day, there's got to be in the judging an element of comparison between gardens as well. You would be devaluing the gold if everybody got one, obviously, even though you can see really fine work in some gardens. At some levels, there's going to be less of an achievement in certain areas, almost inevitively. And the other thing is as well, is that I personally, I think that you can become a little bit blind. Only when the show opens, sometimes do I really see the garden properly. And there's been many times where I thought the garden was okay, but when I look at it in the clear light of day, I can see things that I should have done better or could have done better. And sometimes it's also just a question of luck, I think, you know. Sometimes it's like you catch the wind and everything works with a garden, and it's a breeze, you know, and nothing much goes wrong, and all the flowers come out at the right time, and you haven't made any fundamental mistakes in you know, everything fits somehow or another. It's making something that has a proper context, a proper storyline with no conflicting notes in it. You've got to have quite a lot of wherewithal, really, to avoid all the pitfalls of falling into the kind of traps of having inappropriate things or inadequate things showing in the garden, even if you're really talking about very small levels of failure as well, you know, but just... it can come down to just a few leaves looking rather unattractive, you know. I would set out to try and make look naturalistic, which in my mind includes defect, and there you can brush up against RHS judging in a dangerous way.
Well, judging, as again discussed with Andrew, no better gentleman to do it with, is, as I have always said to him, there is an element of interpretation to it when you design a garden that essentially says, well, I want it to feel this way, and they can say, well, we didn't feel it did that enough, where, as I also discussed with him, if I take a photograph of a piece of Wimbledon tennis lawn, just lawn, but assuming that it's accepted into Chelsea, they have to therefore give it gold if I only put a piece of grass down. Let's sidetrack, however, a slight bit differently, because from a Hampton Court or a Chelsea, you view the gardens from the outset, so the garden is designed a little bit differently, I guess, to what you are doing for Gardeners World Live. And this garden is one that one can walk through on two levels. People get intrinsically up close to what you are in the process of building at this moment in time. Is that a little bit more difficult, the fact that they can walk through? And number two, is a little bit more difficult in the fact that you, for the second year running, have been chosen by BBC Gardeners World Live Show to build a garden for them. It puts you up on a pedestal where, on one hand, you're open to the applause, very much deservedly so, but you're also open to a little bit more of the criticism.
Yeah, well, You're right in saying that the project here at Gardeners World for me is a little bit different from the normal show garden project, because I'm almost hard pressed to actually describe what I'm doing as a garden. It's more like a display or exhibit in many respects. It's deliberately interactive, as you said. Fundamentally, I'm showing off certain gardening display and activity, and at the same time, really wanting, you know, to have a conversation about how things were in 1967 as well. So the take that I've given on this particular garden is that, for a start, I'd do something that's garden-esque, which is dig out a stream and put a humpback bridge over the top of it, which is my warm and welcoming invitation to the public to come into my garden area and find out what's there. And they will see from a distance that there is a garage which will have yet another Mini in it, a 1967 Mini sitting in a what needs to look like a proper 1967 garage. It will have a couple of National Benz old petrol pumps straight from that era as well. And so people will immediately understand that they're going into a certain time and a certain place. There's a little village stores and then a garden centre, which forms, so the join of those three areas creates a courtyard area. And in that courtyard area, basically, you know, we're showing off plants, and we're pretending to sell plants and products from the 1967 period. So, for example, I've got a mental health charity in Northampton growing 2,000 bedding plants that are generally the sort of things that were more popular in 1967 than some of the annual bedding that tends to be more popular today. So, you know, the primary colours fundamentally were a lot more popular in 67, and things are a bit more pastel these days. So so that's the immediate thing that you'll see. It will be a blaze of color, because I'm going to be showing off hanging baskets and 2000 bedding plants grown just as they were in 67 in wooden trays. They would be pricked out even in places like Woolworths, and put into wraps of newspaper and sold that way to the public. Plastic pots were barely around then in 67. Those sort of things were just coming in. In fact, you know, my shrubs in the garden centre will be sitting in tin cans, because that's how they were sold. There was this big change in horticulture around about that time, because the post-war austerity was ending. People were buying houses with gardens, and they had a bit of money to spend on it. And where nurseries were mostly selling produce, vegetables, fruit, and, you know, a degree of ornamental plants, but they were all, like roses, for example. Roses very popular in that era, but they're all open ground plants. You can only get them during the winter when they're dug out of the ground and sold to you. They weren't potted. The whole containerization thing was only just coming in around about that time. So that's a story that we're telling in my pretend garden center area, and lots of other little stories as well.
What's it like for you though, Paul? I mean, were you a gardening child of the 60s? Can I call it that? Were you like me? I know the standard joke is that Peter used to grow plants under his bed when he was five and essentially grew up to go to college and first garden at 10 years of age. Did you do all those things?
Well, I think that I got into gardening in two ways. In my own family home, I used to mow the grass. I used to pretend I was a racing driver, I think, and see how fast I could mow it. And then the other thing that I was fascinated by was that we had a small rockery. Actually, that's a real 1960s thing as well. Actually, people are really not so much into rockeries these days. But I used to love the little alpine plants, the miniature worlds that showed. However, I wasn't heading into horticulture. In fact, I went to art college as a student, failed spectacularly, and by default got a job working with the parks department in London, where I learnt about how to grow plants and how to be a gardener. And actually I found that I really liked it. I found there was a round peg in a round hole, and ultimately, of course, I think the thing that I feel personally strong about is that I have I believe that I have a good eye for getting things in the right place. and I guess that's a side of my initial interest in art that is satisfied in horticulture. You know, I can clearly visualize in my designs how something is going to look in, 5 years, 20 years, I've always found it, really exciting. And, I mean, I've been in horticulture, for a long time now, and there's been very few days where I've ever felt like, I don't want to work today. I always loved going into work and being involved in everything that I do.
But that's a beautiful way to look at it, though, Paul, that essentially it is creating a piece of, in brackets, photosynthetic, but art nonetheless. It's a wonderful, magical way to look at it. And whether it's with my daughter out the back garden looking up at the clouds, and I always, do this thing in my head where we get to, in Peter's head, pick the clouds from the sky and pretend they're marshmallows and eat them. And it's a different way of looking at things, where other people I know see things quite structurally. Does that resonate with you and how you create gardens? Does that question make sense? I guess.
Yeah, I've never banged on about a particular style or way to do things. When I've been approached by clients for private gardens or corporate bodies for corporate gardens, I listen to hear what it is that they want to have. And I try to find a way to interpret that. And I don't try to force onto them things that I believe everyone should have, because actually I don't have that belief at all. I think there's plenty of room for different styles, different atmospheres. It's really important to, my primary role really is to realize people's dreams. I think if I can do that, that then job done.
Wow, what a beautiful way to put it, and what a beautiful way to end this episode of The Sideshow. It has been an absolute pleasure to talk to Paul. You can go and meet Paul and meet and see and walk through his wonderful creation, his photosynthetic art installation, if I might call it that. BBC Gardeners World Live takes place at the NEC Birmingham the 15th to the 18th of June. It celebrates 50 years of BBC Gardeners World, and it is a show that is not to be missed. If you're stuck for anything, if you need information on tickets, a little bit more information, you want us to put you in touch with Paul at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow and sideshow.com. This episode will of course be available in iTunes and all good podcast stores, and if you do head along, please do let us know what you think of the garden. Paul Stone, if people want to get in touch with you, are you on the Twitter? Do you have the website?
Listen, I'm a child of the 60s. I'm really terrible at Twitter, and my apologies on that, but I do have email.
Excellent stuff. Well, we've got Paul's details, as I said, so if you need anything at all, please don't hesitate to get in touch with us. And again, my thanks to the team at BBC Gardeners World Live. Paul Stone, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure, and I look forward to seeing your garden next weekend.
Yeah, thanks Peter, great to talk to you. See you then.
Excellent. Thanks Paul.